First, more than 100 former football players have filed lawsuits against the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA, for head injuries sustained while playing the sport in college. Many of the lawsuits outline severe and debilitating physical and mental health issues, including headaches, depression, and mobility problems. At their most severe, some lawsuits chronicle suicides associated with repeated traumatic head injuries brought about by the contact sport. A former Badger linebacker is one of the latest to challenge the NCAA in court and is one of a growing number of former players raising awareness about the dangers associated with the game. Luke Schetzel is a freelance reporter and contributor to the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. His most recent piece for the WCIJ profiles Tony Megna and his lawsuit against the NCAA. Luke, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be back.
Luke, tell us what first drew you to this story.
So I originally wrote an earlier story about how current student athletes, all of them college football players for the Wisconsin Badgers, were kind of, you know, either willingly downplaying concerns or they were ignorant of the concerns surrounding head trauma and brain injuries in football. And that story led me to Tony Megna's attorneys reaching out to me and wanting his story to be told, and then interviewing him, and then going down to his, he actually owns a medical facility, a non-traditional medical facility in the Racine area. And we did a video shoot as well, so a couple interviews with him.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about Tony's story. Apart from the injuries, it might look like a heartwarming human interest story. Walk-on, mm-hmm. right? For UW,
yeah,
made the
classic
team.
Classic tradition here in Wisconsin, the walk-on tradition. Mm-hmm.
Talk about his story and the injuries that he experienced.
Yeah, so he, you know, came in as a walk-on and knew, in his words, that he had to play beyond himself to kind of prove himself that he was, you know, should be there, should be on the field, should be getting playing time. And, you know, he played alongside on the scout team originally, alongside some of the greats here in Wisconsin. J.J. Watt, who's probably the best player to ever come out of this school, you know, he played right alongside him, played just as well as him on the scout team, actually, before J.J. progressed into the player he became. And then ended up coming back for a while to play behind Chris Borland as Chris Borland's backup. Chris Borland, of course, ended up leaving football due to concerns about head trauma. But then Tony started to, you know, there was never really a set hit that caused it, but he woke up one morning and just had these debilitating headaches. And, you know, they'd be dull throughout the day. They'd never go away, but they'd be about a 3 out of 10 throughout the whole day. But then, you know, they'd pierce and spike, in his own words, multiple dozens times a day, and they'd be a 10 or even an 11, just unbearable to deal with, you know, puking in practice because he was so nauseous because of the headaches. And he could just never find answers.
Want to listen to Tony. This is him in an interview with WCIJ.
There was a constant dull headache that was just always kind of throbbing in my head, and then throughout the day it would pierce and spike as if somebody was kind of twisting my eye a little bit. And then also additional symptoms of memory loss, of nausea and vertigo, and it just began to progress and kind of spiral. My health began to spiral downward.
One concern in these lawsuits is how the NCAA, how conferences, how university sports programs communicated risks and dealt with these problems they're reported. Can you talk about how Tony Megna dealt with these symptoms as a player, how the team doctors dealt with these symptoms?
Right. They, in Tony's words, you know, they always looked to address the symptoms he was, you know, the pain he was feeling, not necessarily what was causing the pain. And they obviously looked for answers as well. At one point, they thought he might have a brain tumor, which, I mean, I can't even imagine having to worry about that. And then also they thought he might have Lyme's disease as well. And just going through a litany of possibilities, but none of them, according to Tony, ever said, oh, it's because, you know, you're practicing and getting hit in the head, you know, 100 times a practice or 100 times a week. So none of them ever pointed to the head trauma, and he didn't come to that conclusion until well after he had left the program.
Talking to Luke Schetzel about a piece he wrote for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. A lot of lawsuits being filed by former college football players against the NCAA related to head injuries and their long-term impact. A former Badger linebacker now joining their numbers, Tony Megna. Luke, a central claim of a lot of these lawsuits is that the university, as I was saying earlier, universities, the NCAA, the sports programs, didn't communicate the risk. Can you talk about what Tony's lawsuit specifically is saying about his experience?
Right. He's not currently in a lawsuit per se. He's planning on filing one. But the central claim is that the education the players receive, which now ever since 2010, the NCAA has mandated a concussion management plan, which only mandates that a school have a program. There's no centralized protocol yet. But each school has to have one. And schools do their own versions, or conferences do their own versions of educating these players on head injuries. And currently though, it's, you know, these fact sheets or these presentations that just talk about symptoms and, you know, you need to report it. You don't want a second concussion when you have a concussion that could lead to death, long-term consequences. But none of them, talk about the potential accumulation of the impacts. And they mention long-term effects, but they don't really explicitly say, CTE, dementia, Parkinson's, memory loss. They don't really spell it out as much as these former players think that they should have. And before 2010, this wasn't mandated at all.
What does Tony say about his health since he left the program?
Told me, you know, especially directly after, he was in a dark place, you know, depressive episodes, suicidal thoughts, a lot of the common symptoms of not just trauma associated with CTE, but just trauma itself. But then he was introduced through, Eastern medicine, non-traditional medicine, acupuncture, oxygen deprivation chambers, non-traditional ways to treat issues. He found out that it was probably due to the head impacts, and probably through news coverage of CTE and head impacts and football, he came to that conclusion, and he actually studied it and became a medical practitioner himself, and now he owns a clinic down in Racine.
And he, before he got to this point, I think you wrote mm-hmm. that he had spent a good amount of money actually in Western mm-hmm. medicine trying to diagnose what was going on with him.
Yeah, tens of thousands of dollars, which is what kind of these lawsuits... One, these lawsuits, you know, their goal is to make systematic change in the NCAA, in what the NCAA would call itself amateur sports, so that these student athletes are protected in what they would consider a proper way. And then also to recover, you know, maybe lost wages because they haven't been able to keep work because, you know, they can't focus, or memory loss, or medical expenses.
Last time we talked to you about it, that other piece you mm-hmm. had referenced, there's a powerful incentive for the player, maybe even if they do know the risks, to downplay them. They love the game. They right. want to be on the field. Maybe their scholarship is at risk if they can't stay on the team, they can't stay on the field. There's a lot of reasons why the players themselves might not pursue the healthiest option.
Right, and yeah, the first article when we talked last time, you know, it was a varying degrees of either players who were just didn't have the knowledge they should have about concussions, which is worrisome, and the fact that they just didn't know. But then there were others who, yeah, the damage that's done is done already. I'm going to keep going because I could make millions of dollars doing this for a living. So it's varying degrees of either not knowing or knowing and accepting that risk.
A question I think a lot of parents have, mm-hmm. maybe younger players who are seeing this news, I don't know, is should we be playing football at all? Tony, looking back, what did he say? Did he regret having played the game?
Right. And it was kind of, I asked him that question a few times, and it was always surprising to hear him say, you know, he doesn't regret it at all. He doesn't regret coming here, doesn't regret trying to keep playing. Because in his eyes, he wouldn't be where he is now with his medical practice without having have gone through those experiences. So it's kind of a silver linings outlook there. And, you know, he still feels like the life lessons he learned playing football were as valuable as he thought of them back then as well.
And is he and players like him calling for changes to the game, the way concussions are managed?
Yeah, he believes that now after going through graduate school and learning more about medicine, he believes that, you know, they need to be more proactive. It's not just sit out for a while and then come back. It's, you know, actively, proactively, even before the injury, you know, massage the scalp, do acupuncture, you know, do these stretches and do all these type of medical treatments even before there's an injury so that it can help prevent, in his words, it's getting the body ready for impact, kind of, which is what he believes the NCAA and even the NFL are lacking completely.
Talking to Luke Schetzel, he's a freelance reporter, contributor to the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. He's with us to talk about his latest piece for the center, which profiles former UW-Madison linebacker Tony Megna, how he's planning to file a lawsuit against the NCAA for head injuries he received while playing college football. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the NCAA, about college football, and this growing number of head injury complaints, growing number of players filing lawsuits against the organization? If you played high school or college football, what was your experience? Would you do it again after what you've seen in the news about head injuries? Do you let your kid play football? Do you think enough care is taken when it comes to head injuries? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue the conversation about the lawsuits being brought against the NCAA by former college football players over head injuries they received while playing the sport. A former Badger linebacker is planning on filing a similar suit against the NCAA, says he's suffered debilitating headaches and other issues allegedly brought on by playing college football. Luke Schetzel is with us, freelance reporter, contributor to the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. He recently wrote about this lawsuit and the wider issues surrounding it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about these lawsuits filed by NCAA college football players against the organization? Do you support them? If you were a football player in college, we want to hear about your experience. Did you have these head injuries? Do you feel a long-term impact from them, do you think? And would you let your kids play the game? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. John is with us in Waukesha. John, hi.
Hi. I was calling. I played football since sixth grade until high school. I did not play into college, unfortunately, but I just didn't realize that didn't realize hitting your head was bad for you. I thought people understood these risks, and I just would like to know, like, why people didn't understand hitting your head was bad for you.
John, thanks for the call. I mean, I think we all get that getting hit in the head was bad for us. Can you talk about some of the latest science and whether or not college football players were aware of the long-term impacts, Luke?
Right, yeah. The first story I wrote, it was spurred off of the whole reason I got started on the story was Harvard and Boston had just come out with a new study showing that, 99% of the brains they had looked at of former NFL players had CTE. So it was just wondering if the players were, one, aware of it, and two, if they cared. And most of the ones I talked to were just not aware of the current events going on. So, yeah, obviously a lot of them did know, most likely, that because I, don't want to generalize for all of them. But, I think a lot of them do understand that, banging your head, getting a concussion isn't good. But I don't think they necessarily understood the long-term effects. They understood that, in the short term, I'm going to miss a game or I'm going to miss a week of practice, but not that, I might miss the last 20 years of my life because I'm going to have a debilitating brain injury.
And one of the concerns here is that it can be more subtle than that concussion and the repetitive actual diagnosable concussion. This idea that the head impact, even if they don't reach the concussion level, you write, it's the equivalent of having, a couple traffic accidents a game sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the accumulation of subconcussive hits. When I interviewed Dr. Bennett Amalu, the doctor who discovered and named CTE, he, said that every time the brain takes a hit, it doesn't go away. It doesn't heal itself. The brain doesn't have a capacity to heal itself. So every small hit is accumulated upon each other. And they just showed a new study. I'm not sure exactly where it came out of. I think it was Boston University again. Showed that you don't have to have ever had a real concussion to get CTE. So it is that accumulation.
John, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Brad with us in Eau Claire. Brad, hi.
Hi. One reason I'm calling is our family has kind of a personal interest in this because the movie Concussion about Mike Webster actually is my wife's cousin. And to add to that, when I played football in high school, we were never allowed to tackle above the waist. If we tackled above the waist, that was considered a bad tackle. The other thing is we never used our head as a weapon, and I can't understand why they haven't put a stop to using the head as a weapon when they're tackling, either in high school football. I think it's more prevalent, though, in professional football and college football. But we never led with our head, and I don't think any helmet would protect your brain from hits like that.
Brad, thanks for the call. There have been changes in the rules, helmet-to-helmet mm-hmm. hits in particular, that used to be highlight reel stuff are now mm-hmm. Treated as devastatingly horrible, I think, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, which is a good change.
Right.
What are you seeing in terms of rule changes? Are the things that have changed? Are the things right. that people are talking about?
I think, yeah, especially the targeting rule in college football. It basically ejects a defensive player from a game if they lead with their head. And that it's gotten a lot of blowback from fans who are fans of quote unquote traditional rough and tough football, but it's seemingly had a positive effect on bringing down the number of head to head hits. But also there's rule changes, in the NFL, especially where they've made rule changes to protect, to address the, last caller's comments about, a good tackle is below the waist, is what he experienced back in the day. But now they want to protect players' legs, especially quarterbacks, because of knee injuries that are becoming a major issue. So then defensive players are forced to hit above the waist. So that, I think, could have a possible negative impact on the number of head impacts.
And I know one of the concerns isn't the tackling necessarily. It's mm-hmm. the beginning of every play when the offensive line,
yeah.
really big guys,
down
and the defensive
trenches,
line,
yeah.
big guys, or the linebackers, like Tony, who we were talking about earlier, crash into each other, a lot of mass and velocity coming together there.
Yeah, down in the trenches. And that's where a lot of these subconcussive hits happen. You know, you're never going to get an offensive lineman who is running 10 yards downfield hitting a defensive lineman 10 yards downfield. So they're not going full speed. It's they're standing up as fast as they can and ramming each other, trying to gain leverage. So that's where a lot of those subconcussive hits happen. So that's where you don't see a lot of diagnosed concussions with offensive or defensive linemen, but you see a lot of the subconcussive data come from linemen.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Luke Schetzel about a piece he wrote for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism on lawsuits filed or being filed by former college football players, a UW-Madison former linebacker planning on joining that list. Back to your calls now. Charlie is on the line in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question for your guest is, for these lawsuits, are we sure that it is only the trauma involved in football? Or how do they take out, say, alcohol or drugs or even steroids from chemically contributing to the or potentiating the CTE that they're seeing in the football players?
Charlie, thanks a lot for the call. There's a lot of research mm-hmm. out there. Does the research try to tease out, okay, this is
right.
impacts from football versus these other factors that Charlie brought up?
I think one of the – when you talk to the current researchers of CTE, of head impacts, of concussion, subconcussive hits, a lot of it is that we just don't have a wide base of natural knowledge of the injury, of head injury in general. So I think that's one – area they're trying to really just expand the database of knowledge we have on the issue. But also, you know, there's a lot of data on youth football players, players who never got beyond playing high school or even youth football that have CTE and concussion problems. So I think that sometimes should tease that kind of stuff out. But I'm not totally sure exactly on how the research would tease that stuff out.
Thanks a lot for that call, Charlie. We'll go next to Kevin in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi, just wondering what kind of data might be out there. Is there research on other impact sports that are not as heavily padded and helmeted like rugby? Are we seeing the same long-term collision effects in sports where the athletes are not dressed like tanks?
Kevin, thanks for that call. I don't know if you've looked into that, Luke.
I haven't looked into that a lot, but I do know one of rugby's issues is skull fractures, which used to be a problem in football back before they had, you know, the normal, you know, helmets we see now. So helmets weren't designed to stop you know, brain trauma, that they were designed to stop skull fractures. So rugby, you might not see as many concussions, but you're going to see more skull fractures. That's the extent of the knowledge I have, though, on rugby. And I do know researchers aren't sure on other non-football sports and less, quote-unquote, American sports. Soccer, researchers aren't sure. Soccer actually might have a higher incidence of concussion and subconcussive hits based on heading the ball, just running into each other, falling down, and stuff like that. So there's a lot of studying to be done yet, for sure.
And briefly, Luke, do we have any kind of timeline on all these lawsuits, all these people filing lawsuits against the NCAA? Anything going to happen soon on that?
So all of these lawsuits are in the pre-trial stage at the moment. The NCAA has filed motions to dismiss on claims of either a statute of limitations running out, jurisdictional claims, or claims that there isn't a argument being brought forth that can be provided relief by the NCAA. And the timeline is anywhere in 2019 or 2020. It's a really long process, especially when you're dealing with as many lawsuits as the NCAA is dealing with.
Luke, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Luke Schetzel, a freelance reporter and contributor to the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. He talked to us about his recent piece looking at a former Badger linebacker, Tony Megna, who's planning on filing a lawsuit against the NCAA, joining a lot of other lawsuits, over 100 so far, over head injuries related to the game.